Well, good morning. This is a strange experience, isn't it? Preaching to a computer. Thankfully, I've got you in a grid format, so I can see about, I don't know, what have we got here, about 20 screens at one go. Don't do anything too wacky or you might distract me, but I know people like to encourage people when they're speaking, so I'm very open to that, and you can put some good big thumbs up or some... you can do Mexican waves or something like that. I don't know what you want to do, but you can. But make sure you keep involved. And just actually, Julia was saying something interesting to me during the week. She said she's been listening as part of, she's doing a lot of CPD for her work at the moment, continual professional development, for those who are not familiar with all the sort of letter thingies. But she was saying she finds it so much easier to concentrate when she's doing a jigsaw or something like that. Certain things that she does, she loses sort of concentration, but when she's doing jigsaws, she finds it easy to concentrate. So if and I notice in the sun lounge in our house right now that they're actually sat at the jigsaw, because that's our jigsaw spot in the new sun lounge. And so I know that they'll be concentrating really well on what I'm saying, because they've got all the tools in place there. So feel free to get the jigsaw out. Sorry if you're too late and you haven't got it out of the box yet, but if you've got your jigsaws handy, then feel free to be placing pieces while I'm talking, or whatever it is that helps you concentrate. I don't have a PowerPoint to show this morning. Sorry about that. Oh, there's the jigsaw being shown for those of you who can see the screen coming live from the lounge. The lounge in our house. Anyway, they're going to be distracting me a lot of the time. I think I'll need to switch off that part of my screen, won't I? Right, so yeah, we're continuing with our series on faith, and particularly looking at some of the heroes of the faith as we would describe them from Hebrews 11. And so I'm going to be concentrating on a couple of those today. But before I do that, we were talking during the week, and Julia just reminded, or was saying about how she'd been listening to, I think it was Phil Moore talk that Chris recommended to Julia. And so she was listening to that. And he mentioned there about sort of looking back at what he'd preached on the first Sunday of this year in their church. And it made me, it provoked me, because I thought, actually, I had the privilege of speaking on the first Sunday of this year in our church. So I looked back over my notes, because, of course, I'd forgotten half of what I'd said myself. So I looked back over my notes to see what I'd been preaching on, and was reminded on there about how I felt to focus on three particular areas. And what I was trying to encourage people to do was to actually, at the start of the year, not making New Year's resolutions, but actually making this year count, and really using the turn of a year to take the opportunity to sort of refocus ourselves and decide to be deliberate about what we do this year, and to looking to really move on in what God's speaking to us about. And I was particularly felt about three areas: worship, prayer, and actually making a difference. And prayer, I think, was something that I really, as we've been talking through last year and as into this year, we felt that prayer was something that God was really challenging us about, lifting the profile of and actually pressing into God much more in prayer as a church. And I believe in a bizarre way that we would never have expected at that time, God has given us the opportunity to do that, perhaps in a way that we really hadn't expected. I recognize that for many people, actually lockdown means that you're more busy than normal and have got more on your plate than normal. But there are also some of us who perhaps are finding a bit more freedom, not necessarily any less busy, but actually having a bit more freedom to choose what we do when. Certainly, I'm working from home, and it gives me a bit more sort of freedom to not necessarily be working a 9 till 5, but stopping at 9, starting early, stopping at 9 o'clock to do PE with Joe, just to keep my body in shape a bit, and or try and get it into shape, and other things like that. I can see that there's some people responding there who are also familiar with this and joining in, hopefully. But it's given us a bit more freedom in some ways as to what we do with our time. And I felt as I was preparing this morning, before I get stuck into what I'm supposed to be talking about, just to encourage you to actually be deliberate at this time. It's so easy when we've got a bit more freedom with our time or different things going on, and perhaps not always a lot going on, to kind of drift and let things just sort of I'll put things off till later, because thinking, well, I've got time later, I can do that. Or but be deliberate at this time. Be deliberate to, as we felt stirred as a church to be getting more into prayer this year, use this time where you've perhaps got a bit more freedom to organize yourself, to be deliberate, to spend time to pray. And actually, as I was chatting with Julia about this morning, she said maybe for some people it's an opportunity to actually put in place sort of a routine for yourself during this time of actually spending more time, whether it be praying or reading or getting into a good commentary, like we've recommended before, things like Fillmore's commentaries, just spending time reading the word, praying. And maybe this is a big opportunity to set yourself into a routine that you can hopefully then maintain afterwards. And that really helps us to stay. We don't want to be legalistic about this, but routines can be very helpful to keep us determined and keep us deliberate about what we're doing. So I wouldn't normally let's not waste this opportunity. Let's not waste this extra freedom that we have, but let's actually be determined. And so I wouldn't actually normally promote my own sermons. I like to sort of recommend that people listen to other people. But on this occasion, I even almost considered listening to it myself, which I find extremely painful, because I really don't like hearing myself on tape or anything like that, or on the internet these days, isn't it? But I don't like listening to my own voice, as I'm sure many of you can probably relate to that. I think it's good to remind ourselves of what God has been talking to us about and speaking to us about. So can I encourage you to, if you have the opportunity, to go onto the church website, listen to other stuff as well, obviously, what we've been preaching through. But actually, I felt that one, the first Sunday of this year, just sort of to remind ourselves, to provoke ourselves and to encourage ourselves to make this most of this unique opportunity that we have. See it as an opportunity rather than a nuisance and all the other things which we naturally respond to what we're going through at the moment. Anyway, that was by way of just provocation and before I move on to speaking from Hebrews 11, and I'm going to be focusing on...
This meeting is being recorded.
I'm going to be... concentrating on verses 21 and 22, and it's talking about Jacob and Joseph, and this is what it says, starting at verse 21. By faith Jacob, when dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph, bowing in worship over the head of his staff. By faith Joseph, at the end of his life, made mention of the exodus of the Israelites and gave directions concerning his bones. Now, for me, as somebody who last year passed a specific milestone in my life of going past, or I'm now 50, but these verses gave me great encouragement, because we can so often think that we'll look back at our lives and think that actually the best years are perhaps behind us, our energy is behind us and all of that. But these verses give us great encouragement, because when you consider Jacob and particularly Joseph, the amazing things that Joseph did during his life, the amazing life that he led. And what does it record in Hebrews 11 about his big moment of faith? Is talking about the instructions he gave about what to do with his bones. I mean, that just seems bizarre. But not even sort of... So it was right at the end of his life. And similarly with Jacob, it was his sort of at the end of his life, when he was dying, it says, he blessed each of Joseph's sons. And so these verses give us great encouragement to both myself and any of the others of you who are feeling like you're getting a bit older, happens to all of us, and those who are even older than I am. And so this gives great encouragement to us. It's so easy. For some people, they can look back and say, oh, many people say, don't they, that the school days are the best days of your life. I cannot relate to that at all. They were not good for me. They were not that great for me. And I would certainly not say that they were my favorite part of my life. I would probably have to say that actually this, since we moved to Scotland just over 10 years ago, would be, which I just passed my 40th birthday about 2 weeks after we arrived in Scotland. And I would say these last 10 years of my life have probably been the best for me. And so I've particularly enjoyed that and still am. But also, so we can look back at maybe our younger and fitter days and think that maybe our best days are behind us. And I remember several years ago when we were on holiday up in further north, a place called Port Mahomet on the east coast, and we went round to Dornoch on the beach there, and me and my children had a bit of a running race. And so this was when I was in my early 40s, I would have been. And I had a bit of a shock because as we started to run across the beach, I'm not quite sure what was happening, but it was as if they were running and I was trying to run, but I seemed to be going up at a walking pace. And so I was hit with this sudden shock that me, who used to be fairly quick chasing after a hockey ball on the hockey pitch and used to be quite quick at that, at this stage in my life, suddenly all that strength and power and speed that I used to have, I was never a 100 meters runner or anything like that, but over 5 meters chasing a hockey ball, I was fast as most other people were. And so I had a bit of a shock at that stage that I was getting older. My body couldn't do what it used to do anymore. And we can get like that, and we can get quite depressed about that. And for somebody who's played a lot of sport over the years, it's quite easy to sort of maybe get a bit disheartened by that. But actually, it's moving on. It's realizing that actually that stage of our life has passed, but actually there's good things ahead for us still. And these verses, as I've said, highlight the lives of these two great patriarchs of the faith. And what causes them to stand out was actually what they did at the end of their long lives. They did both live to a really good old age, and they finished well. And it was what's recorded right at the end of their lives that we're reminded of in Hebrews. And we can be fooled into believing that it's young people or people maybe who are getting into their what we might term as middle age. They've got a bit more experience, but perhaps they've still got the energy and the passion to make a difference. But these couple of verses shout at us. It's for all of us all the way through our lives. We press on in faith. And for all the time that we are given on this earth, we press forward. We hold fast to faith. We hold fast to what we believe God has called us to do while we're here. And this was particularly important for both Jacob and Joseph because they were a critical time in the history of God's people. Joseph who took them into Egypt to escape the famine, if you remember the story. And Jacob, his father, and the rest of the family moved to Egypt to escape the famine. But while in Egypt, so Jacob prophesied in faith about God's blessing over Joseph's children. And And they were reminded that actually while they were in Egypt, that wasn't where they were really meant to be. It's where they were at that particular stage, but it wasn't where they had been given promises. Abraham had been given the promises about his people being a mighty nation and that they would have a land of their own. Abraham was called out of the land and shown that there would be a land that they would have as their own. So they were only ever meant to be in Egypt temporarily. And they had a pretty rough time. The first few years were great, but after those first few years, they had a pretty rough time. And Joseph's act of faith is particularly to be noted. Because like I mentioned earlier, for everything that he did, everything else that he did during his amazing life, it's these instructions about what to do with his bones that he's recorded for as an amazing act of faith, an act of faith that was be an example to all of us for all of history. And so why was this so important? Joseph died, something like, I think it was about 60 years after they'd gone into the land of Egypt. And so for about 300 years, Jacob's bones were sitting in a tomb in Egypt. But they were there as a reminder to the children of Israel, as they would become, that they were not meant to be staying in Egypt, because Joseph had given specific instructions that his bones were to be taken with them, travel with them out of Egypt and go with them into the promised land. Now, this was a break in his family tradition, because Abraham had acquired a tomb in the land of Canaan that he was buried in, and then Isaac was buried there, and then Joseph himself had taken Jacob's remains back into the land of Canaan. He'd got permission from the leaders in Egypt to go back to the land of Canaan to go and bury his father in the tomb in Canaan. But when Joseph died, he specifically gave instructions that that wasn't to happen. There needed to be a break in the family tradition, because his bones needed to serve as a reminder to the children of Israel that that's not where they were supposed to be. And actually his bones were to go with them until they actually took possession of the promised land, the land of Canaan that had been promised to them, and that they would then be able to stay there permanently. His bones were a constant reminder to the people of the promise of God. And it's these promises that were to keep them going throughout their time in Egypt and then throughout their time wandering in the wilderness until they went in and took and defeated the tribes that were in the promised land to take possession of it themselves. And so he broke with this important family tradition in order to keep that reminder. Once they were out of of Egypt, those bones they were carrying around with them for what turned into 40 years around in the desert. But also they reminded them not only that they were to be going forward to the promised land, but also that those bones were a constant reminder that actually Egypt, so when the children of Israel were thinking, actually we were better off in Egypt, we should go back there, these bones that they were carrying around would then remind them, actually, they weren't meant to be in Egypt, because Joseph had said that they were to take his bones into the promised land. So that's why this act of faith is recorded and why it's so important, because it was so vital at that stage. Now, just sort of as a personal testimony sort of linked in with this, my middle name is John. I know some people get funny about their middle names and don't like to tell people what they are, because some people often have strange middle names, but I'm fine with mine. Mine's quite normal. But the important thing for me is that my middle name is actually my dad's Christian name, his first name. So my dad was called John Theodore Millard, And I remember as I was growing up, I was quite grateful that I hadn't been given the name Theodore because it seemed so old-fashioned to me. So I was quite pleased to have a middle name as John. And his father, my grandfather had been called Theodore. And so you can see that there was a family tradition that the name of the father became the middle name of the son. Hopefully that makes sense. So Theodore... So he had John Theodore, and then John had Mark John. So there was this tradition. So when Ben, our firstborn son, was born, he, in theory, should have been called Ben Mark, because that would have carried on that family tradition. And I remember having a phone call to my parents to say, "We've been considering this, and actually we feel that it's right not to call him Ben Mark, but to call him Ben David or Benjamin David." Although, of course, as many of you who know Ben will know, he's never, ever, since his birth certificate, probably been referred to as Benjamin. Even his own mother doesn't call him Benjamin. We've always referred to him as Ben. But anyway, he's Benjamin David. And the reason why we wanted to call him David is because we have a passion for love for God. We have a passion to worship God, and we felt as we were naming Ben that God really impressed on us that David was the man after God's own heart. And so we wanted to name him that as a, this is the marker that we want to put down for our family, that we are family of people after God's own heart. And so that is something that we are passionate about. And now sort of as we stand today with our three grown-up children, it's a great joy to us that all three of them are involved, heavily involved in worship and in leading worship. And that's a real privilege, but also I believe something that God has put on us as a family. I believe it's put it on every believer to be a worshiper, but I feel that as God wants us to be provokers to worship and to encourage people in worship. And so so that's a real thing on us. But I believe it doesn't stop there. It doesn't stop now just being satisfied with where we are, but actually we want to press forward and have that vision to press forward, to continue encouraging in worship, continue to provoking in worship. Over my Christian lifetime, worship has just transformed in the church, throughout the church. And obviously that's nothing personally to do with me, but I've seen it transform over the years. So that in my early days as a Christian, in my early teen years, over 35 years ago, for someone to be playing a guitar in church, in a church meeting, was quite radical. And some of you will remember this as well, that actually at that time, to worship in a church not along to an organ or a piano was a radical thing. And so so this was beginning as I was as I was a new Christian. And then over time, people started doing really wacky things like playing drums in church and playing electric guitars and bass guitars in church. Now, for some of you younger ones, you may be thinking, I've gone bonkers and surely this is normal. And you might have heard us reminiscing, us older ones, about these things. But actually, this is what we've lived through. And I believe that God, it's not just about the instruments you use, it's not just about songs you use, but also God's been restoring what we would call spirit-filled worship or charismatic worship, where we're actually seeing the gifts of the Spirit expressed in worship. And this is something that we're passionate about. And I want to see us keep pressing forward in this, because I think it would actually be quite easy to be satisfied with where we've got to in worship, because the quality of worship is just fantastic. And even in lockdown, we can have good times of worship. And but actually, as we meet together corporately, we've got great musicians, we sing great songs, and it will be so easy to be satisfied there. But I think it's actually, if you stand still, if you're satisfied with where you've got to, you begin to slip backwards. And actually, what we've got now could quite quickly become the new tradition, the new way of doing it, and almost like that spirit life begins to ebb away from it, and it becomes almost like just as we did before, but with using different instruments. And so we need to be passionate about moving forward in worship, and being more creative in worship, and just keeping stirring one another to do that. And even strangely enough, I suppose, through this time of when we're having to be in our homes and we can't meet together corporately in the way we usually do, both individually and corporately, this is an opportunity. This is an opportunity to be creative in the way we worship together, to be creative in the way we worship on our own, and to press forward in these things. And as I was saying earlier, let's use this as an opportunity. Let's use this as a chance to really think about how do we express our love and adoration and worship and exuberant praise to Jesus at this time where we've perhaps got to do it with just one or maybe two other people in our families. And can I encourage you, as we worship together, let's really engage. Let's not be spectators in it. Let's get involved. Let's concentrate. Let's press into God and actually expect God to speak to us and give us words of knowledge and words of wisdom and prophecies, even as we're worshiping remotely in that sense. Because although we can't sort of necessarily contribute and pray in the same way during worship, there is opportunity to communicate to one another in other ways. So let's be thinking about these things. Let's be pressing forward in these things. And so back to Jacob and Joseph, God had, there were big promises to their family. It had begun with Abraham. He had one son, Isaac. The promise to Abraham was big. The promise was for an almost innumerable nation. And so it was big, and yet it began with one person. It began with him and his wife having a child, and then even Isaac just had the two lads, Jacob and Esau. But then as we get to Jacob, we begin to see some degree of multiplication, and he was a very fruitful man. But even going into the land of Egypt, it was basically their close family. So it would have been maybe 25, 30 people at that stage. I'm not sure the exact numbers, but I didn't sort of try and work that out. But I understand God protected them during that time in Egypt. And whereas if they'd stayed in the land of Canaan, if Joseph hadn't led them into Egypt, they probably, if they had even physically survived the famine, they probably would have just got intermarried within Canaan, and they probably would have just kind of dispersed and still been a family, but they wouldn't have had that uniqueness of the people of God that God had called them to be. And so Egypt was actually, as well as being a horrendous time for them, was a time where God really established in them an identity and caused them to flourish, so that 360 years after they'd gone into Egypt, they numbered, the very, very conservative estimate would be 20,000 people. Some people believe it could be as many as a million were the children of Israel as they came out of Egypt and into the wilderness. And so God had blessed them during that time. God had caused what was just a big family to become a nation, even through this very trial and testing time. And so God had blessed them. And these words that Jacob and Joseph spoke at the end of their lives were really key in establishing that and causing that to happen. And so they had lived with a promise, and they stayed faithful to the promise. They grew old with the promise, and they saw that it was to be filled actually many years after their own lives. And yet they stayed faithful, and they was accounted for their faith at the end of their lives. So whatever stage of life we're at, let's press on in faith. Let's move on in faith. Let's grab hold of what we believe God has called us to, both individually and corporately, and let's go for it. Let's keep it in our minds. Let's not let our lives drift, even through this time where our lives have been kind of a bit turned on their head. Let's use this as an opportunity to press in and maybe hear more clearly what it is that God has for us to do. And I believe that God will speak to us as a corporately, as a church together through this time. And maybe God will speak to us individually. I'm sure he will as well, and refine the vision and the calling that he has upon us. And so we are all disciples, and we are all discipling people. And just as Jacob and Joseph encouraged and passed on the vision to those who are coming after us, and just as I've said, we've, as a family, we've looked to pass on and grow the vision in our children. And whether you have your own sort of blood physical children or not, each one of us is discipling each other within the church. And particularly as we grow older in years, and as we have experience, and as we have so much wisdom to give, and actually so much energy, whether even if it's not physical, that sort of mental energy sometimes that folk who have been with us for longer sort of have to partake, to give to us. And so let's be rubbing off on one another. Let's be passing vision on to one another and pressing on together. And just as our bodies may be aging, but the kingdom of God is advancing, and we can see that we've grown so far, see how far we've grown, continue to grow, and let's continue to grow and move forward.